he telling us to go?
Yeah,
oh,
yeah,
he is telling us
up.
To go.
Okay.
We don't actually have any news or anything of value to say or discuss today.
Thanks for listening.
Let's talk about that professor. Very sad. Yeah. So we got to bring it down. Jason Arde. Mm-hmm. Do some seriousness. He is dead, and that is very sad.
Yes.
Sad story, but one worth discussing.
Yes.
This is this professor at Cambridge University who was revealed to be a fabulist, a plagiarist, professor.
Yeah, kind of just like pathological liar. It's
million little
like,
pieces type thing, right?
Yeah,
of just said
Stephen
he
Glass
was yes
sort of character. Yeah.
Claimed to have been nonverbal until 18 or something.
Nonverbal till 11, illiterate until he was 18.
And but yet he became a celebrated Cambridge professor. But this is biographical details very doubtful. He said like he ran 600 miles and he. You know, he was
prophesied for greatness by a, you know, shaman in the
was
Amazon.
He?
Well, that's what he claimed.
Amazing.
Yeah. Oh,
I like that detail.
Yeah. Although it's
fake.
Probably not true.
Yes.
Yeah. He claimed he had been attacked on campus, even though that, you know, hadn't happened or someone sent a pig's head to his home. Also false. So there's many, many lies about his background and just day-to-day life. Yeah.
And then
on
lies.
Top of that, his academic work product was riddled with plagiarism.
Yes. And he was kind of slowly found out, over the last, I don't know how long, months or years. And
a standard story of colleagues having questions and raising concerns about his academic work product, which are then ignored by the university in large part probably because he was presented as a star, the youngest black professor at the university and kind of a star recruit showing Cambridge's, you know, commitment to inclusivity, whatever else. And so they didn't really take those concerns seriously. But then eventually through media reporting and, you know, professors on Substack, including some unsavory characters calling out his many obvious examples of plagiarism, it became undeniable. He was put on leave, fired, or I think maybe he resigned himself.
Yeah.
But the sad conclusion of the story is that this past week he appears to have taken his own life.
Yes, which is very sad. Though... The fact that that happened should not stop people from discussing the process that elevated him, whether there was a desire to appoint for diversity reasons, someone who fits his profile and then overlook details that didn't add up. This is kind of an indictment of higher ed, but some people who are his defender, you know, Ibram X. Kendi, famous anti-racist scholar, said this was a lynching by the media. There's a author who I've liked in the past, Matt Haig, who said, we need more kind of hate speech laws to prevent the media from hounding you to death over this kind of thing, which is interesting because he himself weaponized. There was a journalist who was emailing him, asking questions about his background or his work for Times Higher Education. I can't remember exactly. It was a
Chronicle of Higher Education.
No, it wasn't
right?
The Chronicle. I think it was a British.
Right, the Chronicle of Higher Education will not put any scrutiny towards.
They do some fine stuff.
Yeah, sure.
They do
sure.
some fine stuff. It was some whatever it was. And he called the police because in England, they don't have the First Amendment. So you actually can just call the police and say, this guy's bothering me.
Right.
And he was weaponizing.
Doing journalism. Hello, officer.
Officer. human resources. So he and the police officer said, just stop contacting this guy. You're harming his mental health. So he was weaponizing his mental health against legitimate inquiries and criticism, which is pretty bad.
Yeah, and then in the
contemptible. Really.
Yes. Yeah. That's a pretty low thing to do.
Yeah.
And additionally, in the wake of his apparent suicide, there's been all these calls for restrictions on the press that would you know, there's a number of different restrictions on the press people are proposing. The most ludicrous, and this is one that, you know, like actual like MPs are proposing this. Amnesty International, the UK branch, endorsed this.
Yeah, fucks.
Alleged, free, you know, human rights group has said that we should limit the number of articles that can be written about a single person in a particular span of time in order to prevent
limit the number of headlines.
Yeah. Oh right. God. Can you believe that?
Well, that's a fat. That's a great metric. Oh my God.
Yeah, totally workable.
Screw those people.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate. Look, a star professor touted by the university as a rising academic at one of the most prestigious universities in the world, being discovered as a plagiarist and a fabulist.
Fabulous. Is it fabulist?
I don't know.
I always say fabulous.
I've only read it, so.
A fabulist is someone who makes up fables, like Aesop. Right.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's fine. Yeah. You probably didn't come up with that tortoise and hare thing by yourself. Well, that's long gone now.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Aesop's
fables in a moment. I'm writing that down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll get to it eventually.
Yeah.
Unless you want to run through it right now.
Aesop slop.
Slop Rocky.
About the professor who killed himself.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so that's always going to be a global news story, right? There's been, prior to his apparent suicide, there had been this pushback that, this was massively overcovered and, you know, spun up by right-wing media because, of course, they couldn't bear to see a black professor at Cambridge, whatever. And, I mean, certainly, like, the DEI aspect of this is what encouraged, I think, a lot of attention to this story when run-of-the-mill academic plagiarism that, you know, is rotting the institution would not get such coverage.
It from the inside out.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
Sure, but what is to be done there, right?
It's all bullshit social psychology or observational historical analysis that doesn't hold up to minimum.
Right, lots of scrutiny, right? Yeah, I mean, this guy was a sociology professor, right? So, like, what are we, by it all being plagiarized, what are we losing exactly?
Man, I watched, like, one of his lectures or something on YouTube.
Nonsense.
It was just total nonsense.
Right.
It was real bad. It was like about cultural appropriation. It was so bad.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that like we have all these nonsense disciplines and with all these nonsense ideas packed into them probably creates a lot of plagiarism to begin with because no one takes this work product seriously, not even the practitioners.
They should use the slop term is becoming overused.
I don't like it.
And I don't like it, but it should be applied to this.
Yeah.
This is slop.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly. Yeah.
Ivy slop.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just words. Just words, you know? Yeah. I mean, the one thing I guess I will say for the, you know, the critics who want to crush freedom of the press in order to protect plagiarists, there is an unfortunate aspect of modern media, right, where, you know, there's nothing wrong with one publication writing an article about this or any one publication writing an article about this. But when a story goes viral and everyone is writing about it, it can seem like overkill.
Yeah, I've said this before. Social media in particular is just not – does not calibrate to the correct level of outrage about something.
Yeah,
it's well done. This is true, you know, when I used to write about campus stories and I would criticize some stupid student activist who, you know, wanted to shut down a speaker, you know, doing something dumb. But, like, I wanted to chide them a little bit. I don't want their life ruined. I don't want them to endure weeks of harassment. So eventually I decided that there was no way to fix this, that as my profile increased, it was impossible for me to bring down the correct level of scrutiny on them. So I stopped using their names or just like making it a little bit harder to identify the person.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, it's not going to come out correct.
Yeah. But there's no correct solution like from the individual journalist perspective, right? Is either you could not apply any scrutiny to public officials and people that deserve it, or you could not care about the wider impact of your work, but there's no, either right. one is both bad.
Just like...
Either one is failing to do your job in a way, I guess.
Just like it would probably be better if there was less or no coverage of the school shooter or political assassin's manifesto, the pouring over his lives that there's a moderate social contagion effect, I think is true. These people... they get off, like what excites them about doing this is that you will later be pouring over their diary. That's part of the whole thing. It's a absolutely key psychological part of this. And if we all agreed we will not make any attempt to shed light on this. We will not put the person's name in the news. We will not probe their beliefs. I think plausibly that might be the right way to do it. It's not possible. Mm-hmm. It's not an option. We can't pull that off because we can't have the restrictions that would be necessary to stop the media from doing that. The media is not going to choose not to do that because people want to know. People are curious and they want to know mm-hmm. who this guy was, what made him do it, because we all think that it should be some plot. Oh, here, how did this nice, normal person encounter this exact series of circumstances that turns you into... you know, somebody who shoots up a school, because it's right. so incomprehensible to us and we want to understand it.
Yeah.
But sometimes these things are just not comprehensible.
Yeah.
People are mentally ill and doing bad things. And yeah. it's not more, it doesn't get more understandable than that. But mm-hmm. we're going to try, we want to make sense of it. And the media is just filling the role of giving us the information we are seeking.
Yeah.
And there's just nothing you can do to stop that, right?
In a case like this, where it's like there's a legitimate, you know, you could say that, okay, covering the shooter's manifesto right. or whatever, that's just kind of voyeuristic. And, you know, even if, you know, it's the right call for you not to cover it, even though someone is going to, and that doesn't solve mm-hmm. the problem. But here's a case where it's like this deserved coverage, this deserved media oversight. But there's, I guess, maybe there's no correct way to calibrate that.
I mean, Kenny's saying it's the media's fault.
No,
for shining
not.
A spotlight.
No,
on
no, no,
him.
No. The person.
And he's
know.
Also implying that because this guy's a black academic, he's being held to stricter standards. This came out too with Claudine Gay, the Harvard University president, who got caught in a not nearly as significant, but you know, lazy copying of passages mm-hmm. type thing. Not like your whole output being
totally
error riddled.
That was a more minor scandal.
Still bad. Still something a Harvard University student, had they done, would have been academically disciplined. So I didn't understand an argument for holding her to a lesser standard.
So I think that's an important part of this, is that the university holds the students to one particular standard,
right.
but then the academics themselves
right.
are not held to that standard. Yeah, you know, in the wake of the Claudine Gay scandal, John McWhorter, you know him,
mm-hmm.
yeah. Really interesting guy, linguist, I think at Columbia University. But he had an interesting essay saying, like, we actually should, like, distinguish between different types of plagiarism and treat one, like, mm-hmm. a lot less severely than another. Because, like, a lot of the Claudine Gay plagiarism, I didn't make a close study of the issue, but what he was contending is, like, a lot of it was, like, you're basically without attribution just repeating like the boilerplate of your
right.
particular discipline, which is a big distinction between that and like completely fabricating your dissertation, which
yeah,
is
yeah,
what
yeah.
Jason
it
Arden
was not
did, right?
fabricated. I mean, she took sentences from other academic published work and didn't either paraphrase it enough, or if not paraphrased, didn't say according to whoever enough.
Yeah.
Yes,
so it's like the fix is so minor that it's like you
yeah.
should have just done that.
You do have to do that, though. We all do have to do that.
But, you know, on the flip side, it's like I don't consider this like a very serious thought
yeah.
crime per se either, because like you're not even really pretending it's your own thought.
I mean, I guess it makes it harder to follow if you're going to trace back to where the root of the idea is,
yeah,
especially
sure.
in the social science, because sometimes bad notions or statistics will persist across, like the you know, 1 in 5 women will be assaulted on a campus
mm.
statistic, sexual assault statistic
mm.
is like became widely accepted conventional wisdom because it was cited over and over again and over again. And if you followed it down to its root, it had nothing to do with that. It was not referring to, I believe, even on campus activity.
The footnotes
exactly
allow for some auditing to
right.
happen. Yeah, that's
right.
a good point. That's a really good point.
Yeah.
You know what's allegedly plagiarism that, like, I think is completely ridiculous is, have you heard of the term self-plagiarism?
Yeah, I do a lot of that.
Yeah.
I mean, I say the same things on social.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Like, you have so many takes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you wrote it one way. You liked how you wrote it that way. You're going to say it again.
Yeah.
I mean, I can understand. There's certain circumstances where that would be inappropriate, where, like, maybe someone commissions you to write a new piece, and then you just turn in something already written.
Right.
Yeah, that's bad. But, like, for the most part, it's like, they're my words. I get to decide when I employ them.
It gets a little hazy. I will say, you'd be surprised at that it's more difficult to just accidentally write the same thing again than you'd think.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, like, because some people will be like, well, isn't that just the way of saying that, expressing that idea is that sentence? So it's not even surprising that, you could say that with Claudine Gay's thing. Well, she said it the way this other officer said it, but isn't that just the correct way to say it?
Mm-hmm.
No, mm-hmm. It's not the case. Like, you would be shocked at how similar ideas will not be copied from each other if you're actually applying your own original thought to say it.
Sure.
In terms of self-plagiarism, I mean, I deal with this because I write something for Reason, and then I might do that as a monologue for my show, or vice versa. I might do a monologue for the show and then write it down as a thing for Reason. I just try never to, like, never do the, never do one-to-ones in format.
Yeah.
Right. And if I've already done a monologue on it for one, I don't want to do it on the other.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. Well, that's just, you're depriving your readers of your many, many thoughts. Yeah.
But, you know, if you're the Robbie completionist, I'm sure you're hearing some of the same material every week, because it's just a finite number of things happening, especially in August. Nothing's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, like, I don't know, you're, like, doing, like, policy reporting. Well, it's like, well, at a certain point, like, there's a one sentence way to describe what this bill does. Right.
Sure.
So, I mean, come on.
Yeah. Sure.
But yeah, it's no good, but, I don't know.
All human life is precious.
Yes.
It's very sad when someone
dies. We all have equal value in the eyes of the Lord.
Yes, so. That is true. That is true. Have you followed at all? I didn't tell you. I might bring this up.
Just boy, I got to think on my feet.
Awful death tragedy thing. This Lindsay Clancy case at all. That's the mother with the three kids she killed.
Yes, and no one is denying that she did it, including her.
Right.
Yeah, this is something I've followed only on the, like, periphery of my social media.
Yeah, we should talk
vision.
About this, because on one hand, so it's now becoming kind of a right wing, to, like, Matt Walsh has discussed it a lot.
And this is why I haven't taken a deeper dive, is because I can just tell this is one of those things that's going to, like, everyone is going to be annoying and insane. So I'm like, I'm going to let the judicial process play out. But you brought it up, so fuck.
I'm bringing it up. Here we go. There's no debate that she is really the one who killed the kids. The debate is
No. Her
mental
team,
state.
Right.
Yes.
That's her defense, is that she isn't actually culpable of murder, right?
Right, yeah. Because of postpartum psychosis, which is different from postpartum depression, which affects a lot of women and is exacerbated by your circumstances or how much assistance you're having or how much sleep you're having.
It can affect any pregnant
where
person.
Where psychosis is a rarer, more unusual. I mean, this kind of thing doesn't happen that often. And it matters, right? Because if she's, you know, literally psychotic, then you're not, I guess, responsible for your decisions. Although I think you have some obligation to take steps to limit the harms you can do to others when you're not in your psychotic state,
mm-hmm.
knowing that you are veering in a psychotic direction, like, then you should have yourself committed or take, you know, I mean, like, if I run over a bunch of people because I'm drunk driving, and say, well, it's not my fault. I was drunk.
Yeah.
But you have a responsibility not to put yourself in that situation, right? If you're psychotic when you're not on medication, you have a responsibility to take your medication.
Right.
I mean, that's how I feel about these things.
And
I
also,
know the law doesn't exactly follow
from the
up with that.
Perspective of a criminal justice system, if it's like, oh, I can't stop myself from killing people. It's like, well, okay. What are we, the jury, supposed to do here?
Then we're going to lock you up.
Forever, right?
Yeah. And it's a really disturbing kill. You know, she says while she was psychotic, but coldly and rationally executed these three children one after the other. The final one trying to get away. She sent her husband out of the home to do it. There's been a lot of scrutiny on him.
Wow.
And then I think she did try to take her own life, but failed, which is why she's in a wheelchair.
Mm.
It's so. So Matt Walsh has been like, this woman's, she should be killed. She's, you know.
Okay.
I don't, okay, she should be imprisoned. I don't have a lust for vengeance. Mm-hmm. And I think you occasionally see that, well, due to her, what was done to, we don't, no. That's, we're back to Stone Age savagery very quickly if we do that. So that's no good. So I don't like to see any of that. But I have been surprised, but it has finally gotten through to me. The volume of women I see sympathizing with her and expressing that, like, well, I was very stressed out as a new mother too, and like that this is even slightly on your radar as a plausible thing to have seems. And there are women like outside the courtroom, like doing. Like outside the courthouse, you know, praying in solidarity with her, and
yikes!
That's a yikes.
That's pretty darn bad.
I don't get it.
Yeah.
The same way with that, you know, Carmelo Anthony trial, that there's, for racial reasons, people, you know, think that he should get off, and I just, like, I don't understand, like, having solidarity for, like, very surface level identity reasons,
right,
with someone who is just clearly guilty.
I feel like this actually kind of undermines her defense, because the vast majority of women who have babies do not go psychotic and kill their children.
Right.
And so it's like you can have these real feelings of postpartum depression or whatever else and not do this terrible thing. So that doesn't seem to me to be a defense, even if you find some level of.
And we say that even though, as lovers of women, as fathers of daughters, absolutely, or daughters of fathers, and so on.
As a Johnny Appleseed of bastard children.
it's an uncomfortable thing to see. Also, I would not, I mean, this is so dark, but like, if I had caused, I don't have children, but if I had, even it was not even in a moment of psychosis, murdered them, I would like not want to be alive anymore.
Yeah.
If I had done that to not to children who were not even my own, again, if I had run them over in my car, I would probably like not want to be alive. I mean, not that that's a good thing.
That's
you wouldn't catch me in front of a courtroom trying to argue that it's not, you know. Have mercy on me. Yeah. God have mercy on my soul.
You'd find me outside that courtroom being like, string him up.
You know? I say hang the man. Yeah.
What motivates a person to actually like show up to a courtroom for a case that they don't have any personal stake in?
Weird.
I find this completely bizarre.
Right.
Yeah. There was...
I mean, this is similar to the fangirling over Luigi Mangione. Mm-hmm. Or whoever it is.
Any serial killer or whatever else.
Yeah, but at least he's good looking, I guess. But, you know, cold-blooded murderer who absolutely should face the justice of the state.
Yeah.
And they're just like, oh my God.
Just like, where do you find the time in your day to do this, right?
Yeah.
Like, surely you gotta, like, run some errands or go to work or whatever. It's like, I remember this example doesn't really have anything to do with anything, but there was a Trump appointee for some ambassadorial position. And I know about this just because he was from where in Oregon I lived, right? And he became controversial for some sort of Trump-era Russiagate thing. I don't remember the details. But, like, whenever he'd fly back to Portland, he'd get, you know, mobbed by protesters at the airport, you know, shouting at him about he's bringing down the Republic, whatever. You know, on the one hand, it's like, okay, I don't care if, like, public officials get yelled at. You know, you got the job. It's like, for you, the person doing the yelling, what motivates you to drive out to the airport to harass some minor player in some Trump admin scandal? Like, what are you doing with your time?
People are so much weirder than we think.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree with this. People who get really invested in, you know, murderers or seeing the good in. I mean, this is a age old phenomenon, right? Charles Manson gets would get fan, you know. Mm-hmm. People are weird. Yeah. Sick.
Real sickos. Fucks. Yeah.
And
not our audience, I know.
No, you're good, coldly rational people. Our audience has no sympathy for these women,
nope.
I bet.
No, none. Yeah.
Oh, if there's a woman watching this program, we'd love to hear from you. Tell us.
Yeah, who's the first?
it's just that people are so strange.
Yeah,
you know, just have totally healthy obsessions.
That's right. Yeah. You know, French Revolution, you know,
Russian literature, science fiction. War. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the male version of true crime.
The Civil War. The Civil War. Whatever happened there. Whatever was it fought. tallying the Holocaust, which can only be tallied so much.
Right.
And then we just get into projections territory.
Yeah. It's some round numbers, obviously.
Something happened. Yeah.
But, I'm not a mathematician.
Yeah. No. Right. Good stuff. All right. Should we talk about something a little bit on a lighter topic?
Suicide and matricide. Or it's not matricide if you kill your children.
That's mother. Killing your mother?
Yeah.
So it would be fratricide is killing your
brother or countrymen. Yeah.
Patricide is killing your father.
Yeah.
There is a term for it.
Yeah. Well,
I'm not going to Google it.
Come on.
Okay. Another crime, but a fun one.
Ooh.
Pablo.
A diamond heist?
Pablo Pledgescobar.
Oh, yes.
Did you hear about these cocaine guys?
These fucking goofballs, man.
What university was this again? Was it?
Penn State.
Penn State, of course.
First scandal to hit Penn State.
Yeah. Snow Paterno.
Yeah. Right.
But here's the thing. I can't even pretend, and I don't have to with you, that I think this should be a crime.
No, of course not. College kids selling each other coke.
They should be able to do that.
Yeah.
They should be lauded. Not imprisoned. They should be celebrated.
I think people's reaction should be neutral.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This should not be a crime.
If you ever did illegal drugs when you were in college, obviously I didn't. You didn't. But
not in college.
Then you have no call to be judging these guys.
I agree.
Yeah. Someone had to supply it to you, right? So it's like, oh, thanks for selling me the coke. Bye. Now you're going to prison. Come on. It's such a bad attitude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're all ratting each other out too, you know.
Last one on a sinking ship. Yeah, no honor among thieves here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's why, what happened to a fraternity, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I thought they were your brothers. You're selling them out.
Clearly not. Yeah, I guess that was one of the things they made the pledges do was mix the cocaine.
They got him because he didn't change his name on Venmo. It was just the same name.
Easiest mistake to make.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, there was also a Venmo very young man who just won a Republican primary, one of the Duffy kids.
Yeah.
Right. And they're like, oh, but all his Venmo transactions are for. Have you ever captioned a Venmo transaction anything other than drugs, strippers?
Mm-hmm.
Mine are just gay sex. Mm-hmm. And only half of them are for that.
Yeah, right.
So what about the other half?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
this is a pretend.
No, that's just some bullshit dim oppo research that they're trying to make into a story.
Yeah.
Nonsense.
Anyway, free Pablo Pledgescobar.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when are we going to end this drug war? What are we going to do? Some of these guys? Yeah. Come on.
Come on. Now.
Come on.
This is not a.
They used to put it in Coca-Cola, right?
It's like a strong cup of coffee. Not that I would know anything about that.
No.
But I hear things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally nonsense.
Yeah. We weren't.
Nonsense.
Yeah. Hey, if you like the witty banter on this podcast, you gotta like cocaine.
Oh. No, it's actually, we don't talk about this. You know, it's so focused on marijuana, which so obviously should be illegal. I can't believe it would be legal that we mm-hmm. are still talking. And it is mostly kind of legal now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we've won pot. We gotta do coke next.
Yeah,
this is just ridiculous that this is.
Yeah, the problem is you watch movies where people do cocaine and it's always they turn into an animal, right?
Yeah.
When they do it, it's this all-consuming experience of theirs.
Yeah.
But that's what I hear is not not the actual experience of doing cocaine, right?
Right.
The one thing that is bad about cocaine right now is that it is much more dangerous than it used to be because of fentanyl has gotten into everything.
Well, right, that is the problem. But that's a danger that you take. It's not a danger to others.
Right.
It's the danger you accept from consuming the product.
It does make it a little more, I think, I don't know where these guys were sourcing their materials from.
Right.
But it does make it a little more morally suspect if you're selling it and you can't speak to the quality of the drug. Right. Sure. But again, this is something that would be cured by legalization.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Because the fentanyl is it's as if a product being sold has poison in it.
Right.
Right. That's a you The reason that doesn't generally happen, if you like buy a box of cereal that there's arsenic in it, is that you could, I mean, there's regulation to prevent it, but you could sue Kellogg's for that. They have an incentive not to have arsenic.
They have a brand reputation.
Yeah, they have a reputation. Mm-hmm. You don't have that when you're dealing with illegal drugs.
No, not at all. Yeah.
You know the other way though to fix the fentanyl being in a problem?
How's that?
You let somebody else do it first.
Oh, that's smart. Yeah. Well, it's tricky though, right? Because like all you need is a little bit. And so like there could be just like a little bit in the other part of the bag or whatever cocaine comes in.
Yeah.
And yeah, so not foolproof. So don't do cocaine, kids.
Don't do it.
But
you should be allowed
in
to
in an
do
environment
it.
Of legalization, you know, that would be it would be a different
That
matter.
Should be the next shoe to drop. We gotta get that.
No, it's going backwards again. Though. People, all these, you know, whiners at the Atlantic and the Manhattan Institute are like, oh, weed legalization was such a mistake.
Oh, it smells so bad.
People
everywhere.
Are getting high and playing video games. Oh, yeah. Come on.
It's pathetic.
Yeah.
I mean, again, everything if done in excess can be harmful to some people. Like I'm sure there are people who do way too much marijuana or doing the stuff that is stronger potency than it used to, and they would be lazy anyway. Let's be real. Or maybe having there's the psychosis. Some people can have psychosis.
Some people shouldn't do it at all.
Some people shouldn't do it. Mm-hmm. But the idea that I can't do it because you have a problem is just fundamentally contrary to how I see the world.
Yeah.
Because I don't have a problem because I show up to do this podcast every day we do it.
And you're coked out of your mind and it's great.
It's not a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did have an
interesting... Some people even say like you can have a problem drinking. That's crazy.
Yeah. Well, and that's, you know, we always go back to that example because that is by far a more dangerous to you and also dangerous to people around you because it lowers your inhibitions to do reckless behavior that impacts other people. Mm-hmm. Alcohol, also very addictive. Your system gets very addicted to it. You drink more and more and more of it. It, at the abuse level, destroys your life, destroys the life of your friends and family members, makes it you can't hold a job. You drive, it gets people, it kills you and people around it at the level of abuse. Mm-hmm. And we allow it fully you got to be 21, but then let it rip.
Right. There's up.
Let it rip.
Up and down, you know, any high street in any city is alcohol dispensaries, right?
Yeah.
And I could go for a drink right now.
Yeah. Oh, God, it's good. Good stuff. What have you been drinking these days? Are you off the wagon or on the, because you go through periods of not drinking.
Yeah, I went, I had another like 6 weeks or so of I was not drinking and then, you know, then I got back onto the light beer train, but now I think I'm going to back on the wagon again. Nice. Cause I started like counting my calories and you just realize like once you, how like drinking throat. Yeah. I mean, that's alcohol. You need to metabolize alcohol. And so it's like there's no getting around the calories in alcohol. I mean, you can drink a light beer. You can drink a glass of red wine. But like that's still the
alcohol. I mostly drink wine.
Yeah.
I drink wine and hard liquor. Mm-hmm. I don't really ever drink beer. Although I did there was video footage of me. I chugged a beer the other day.
Oh, wow.
My first beer of the year.
First beer of the year? Shut the fuck up.
I don't drink beer that much. I have like one beer a year. And I was playing a drinking game, fun one with Natalie, I lost. There was like 10 people playing it, and I lost. So then I had to drink the beer.
You do look a little bloated.
But yeah, you gotta watch your calories.
Yeah, you guys went. You keep telling me, you know, I gotta have some sort of eating disorder, and I just can't. I can't do the gagging.
No,
so,
I hate throwing up.
It's the worst.
Worst feeling ever. Yeah. I never do it except that one time when you gave me. Those.
Zins, yeah.
The sorry. Zins.
I had
an immediate.
Yeah, that was violent. Yeah. I tended to you, though.
You took such good care of me. You got a wet cloth and you're there.
Made sure you didn't fall asleep on your back. You're welcome.
It was great. And I smoke cigarettes not on a daily or regular basis, but when they're offered to me.
That's why I was surprised.
So I thought I could handle my nicotine, and man. Yep. Man, did those knock me over.
Well, never again.
Yeah. I steer clear of the Zins.
You know, that's apparently why they, in Mad Men, you know, they're always smoking on the show.
Mm-hmm.
they have them smoking like herbal cigarettes, not actual tobacco.
I wondered about that.
Yeah. And so the reason they do that apparently is not because they're any healthier for you. You're still inhaling, you know, smoke in your lungs, but because there's no nicotine in them. Because like a normal person, if you're going to be doing multiple takes with a cigarette in your mouth, would just be vomiting from the amount of nicotine that you're consuming, unless you're like a regular smoker. So that's why they do it.
I wondered about that. I thought it was, yeah, they were, no, because they are smoking.
Yeah.
They're actually smoking cigarettes.
Yeah.
I wondered.
Yeah.
I wondered. Okay.
Speaking of, yeah, you guys went to My Chemical Romance concert. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Another Robbie and Natalie outing and some other people. It was great.
Yeah, you enjoyed it.
My Chemical Romance, one of those bands I love from my adolescence as a, you know, millennial kid who grew up in the 90s and aughts. It was great. They also did it the way I've come to, I don't go to a lot of concerts, but the last one I went to was Green Day like 2 years ago. It was the same thing. They just did, this was the 20th anniversary of the Black Parade album, and they just did the whole album and they did it in order. I prefer that.
Yeah.
I actually, I want to hear just all the songs from the album in the same order as they are on the album. You know, maybe if you, maybe if it's a band that has a huge number of hits across different albums that I would like, I guess I would want to hear it that way. But I like just hearing, Green Day did this too for American Idiot, just did the album from start to finish.
I have mixed opinions on this because I've seen bands do this. Clutch, my favorite band, they played Blast Tyrant, which is my favorite album of theirs, all the way through. One time I went to go see them. Boris, this Japanese metal band I like, they I went, was their like Heavy Rocks anniversary, one of their early albums. And they played the thing the whole way through. And I on the one hand, it's like, it's cool because A, you like the album and you're like, ooh, we're going to hear a lot of like things that are kind of deep cuts, right? Things that like aren't necessarily the hits, but are on the good album. And so you're going to hear them live. The downside is a band with any sort of substantial discography, it's kind of fun to be like, ooh, which one are they going to play next? What are the songs coming up, right? So it does take a little bit of the anticipation out of, and a little bit of the surprise out of the listening experience. But I don't mind it. Yeah.
I see what you mean.
Yeah, I never got into the emo rock phase. That was, it was, its popularity was just starting to wane just as I was getting into music. And so it was kind of like, and I was getting into metal music. So
you like harder stuff.
Yeah. So that was kind of, yeah, really into the hard stuff.
Yeah.
My Chemical Romance is the cocaine and I like the fentanyl.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm just opposing.
But, yeah. So back in the day, like that was kind of like the enemy, right? Emo rock. So you're either going to get an emo rock or you're going to listen to Pantera or whatever. Now I have a little bit of, it's crazy to think this, I have a little bit of nostalgia for it in that it was like, that was the last time where like rock had any sort of like dominant cultural force, right?
I miss it.
I do. Yeah. It's gone now. No one listens to rock bands at all, right?
The Smashing Pumpkins guy,
Billy Corgan.
Billy
right?
Corgan had some interview kind of recently where he described how the deliberate rock was deliberately demonized by media and government or people and driven out of popular. That's his view, which I'm not sure if that
doesn't really make sense at all.
I'm not sure if that's correct.
The
but,
demonizing makes it cool for teenagers. What are you talking about?
I don't know what he means.
No, the reason that rock isn't popular is so now it's seen as like, I mean, it's a little bit of chicken and egg thing, but like it's like an old fogey thing now, right?
Right, because your dad loves it.
Right, yeah, dad rock, that's the term. Yeah.
I love dad rock, though.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
But I'm getting to be the age of, I'm the age my dad was when he was listening to that music, so.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. It was a great concert, a huge number of people. It was at Nats Park.
Okay.
It's the baseball stadium in D.C., which is conveniently right where I live.
Yeah.
So I love going to events there because I can walk. It's like two blocks. I walk.
You don't get to walk off that beer, though, you know?
Yeah. I had a frozen pina colada type thing.
Come on, man.
And I was hung over the next day.
It's all that sugar. Yeah.
Yeah, they got me.
Every Halloween time, I'll, you know, it's the one time of the year you can eat candy corn. I love candy corn.
I like
and
candy corn.
I'll eat too much, then I'll get like a literal candy corn hangover.
You go trick-or-treating with all the other young people?
Yeah, some people say it's weird. I don't give a fuck.
How sexy is your Halloween costume?
Pretty sexy.
Pretty sexy. Oh.
Yeah. I also have mixed feelings about arena rock shows. My ideal concert is like a bunch of drunks in a small basement.
Of course.
But the problem is, like, you know, some bands, you're not going to see them unless they're playing a giant venue. So what are you going to do?
Yeah.
And the bands that, like, some bands, you know, because that's their thing now. They're popular enough. They've been doing arena shows for a while. It's a whole stage production, and that adds a little bit of, you know, joy to it.
Yeah, they had done a kind of like, you know, the Black Parade is a pretty stereotypical emo album. A lot of like kind of Tim Burton character or the visuals of it. They're in these skeleton costumes. They look like the rock band from the Hocus Pocus movie, like, you know, skeleton, dark makeup, dead, undead. But they added this kind of almost a Soviet imagery on the screens, and like Kafka-esque, like confusing messages. And it looked like Russian, but I think it was actually just a made up language, almost like anti-authoritarian. Anti-Soviet, anti-communist? Oh, yeah, really? Huh. So that was, it didn't, to my mind, fit with the album, excuse me, at all, but it is an aesthetic I like, so it was kind of cool.
Yeah, I remember I went to go see the British grindcore band, death metal band, Carcass once, and they had a big projection of, you know, the Gates of Auschwitz, but like superimposed on like dollar bills, right? Pretty heavy-handed social commentary, right? But what was bullshit about it is the singer goes up there and then he starts chiding the audience for complaining about the price of the tickets. And it's like, that pissed me off for two reasons. One being like, you know, it's like, well, I didn't complain about the price of the ticket, you know? And so it's like when the teacher is, you know, haranguing the class because no one did the reading and you did the reading. And it's like, but I was good. I was good. But then secondly, it's like, well, okay, come on. If greed is the source of all evil, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, you're selling t-shirts, buddy.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah.
You think you're better than the rest of these guys?
Yeah. Do you like, the only band that I like, it's a rock band that might be one closer to, it's like a harder rock-ish, screamy emo one, Billy Talent.
No, I don't know.
Do you know them? You might like them. They're a Canadian.
Well, there's
it's also of that era.
You know, the genealogies, they just cleave so much, right?
Like, and languages.
So it's like, yeah, sure. I mean, we barely understand each other now, right?
Right.
You know, there's like emo, and then there's like the heavier bands that follow from the emo trajectory, and I never got into those either, right? But then I can go back and, you know, there's like, okay, there's like rock that isn't that heavy that I really enjoy as well. So it's not necessarily like heaviness per se. It's just like, which genetic lineage do you follow? Yeah. Although sometimes there is, you know, convergent evolution and, you know, we can meet in the middle. So maybe this is that band. I'll give them a listen too.
Yeah, I think My Chemical Romance goes with like Good Charlotte and Green Day and Fall Out Boy and Panic at the Disco.
Stop.
Love all that shit. That's the good stuff for me.
Yeah, these are the bands that I remember their songs just enough to remember that I hate them.
I brought my husband to this concert. He'd never heard of this band. He's never heard of this kind of music. You know,
what did they listen to in Taiwan?
he likes K-pop.
Oh, okay.
This is not K-pop.
T-pop.
Yeah, but
T-pop.
He appreciated it.
Okay.
And Welcome to the Black Parade is a good song. So, so we had fun. Good
okay.
for us. Well, I did a little bit. I tried to dress the part the best I could. I wore some old skinny black jeans and a black tank top, and I got like a choker necklace, and I did some heavy eyeshadow and everything.
Yeah. Man, you had a special order all of this, huh?
No, this is another Friday night, so we all like to dress up a little bit.
It was fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good concert, and the weather was, it's just been beautiful lately in DC. This is really
nice,
good part of the summer. There's so much to do in the last couple of weeks. I've just been exhausted. I'm not getting enough sleep. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of fun to be had.
Oh, okay.
You know,
my invite got lost in the mail, but
We've all just been hanging out constantly. without you, but just like unending fun. Some really core bonding experiences are occurring between me and all the other people in your life.
Well, that's why I love doing the podcast, because I get a glimpse of what it could be like.
What you're missing out on.
Right.
Yeah. And that you've just not been a part of it at all. And that's an oversight on someone's part that we'll just never be able to fix, I guess.
That's what happens when you get on the wagon, right?
Yeah.
You become less fun to be around. And
yeah, we can't have, you know, unk. You know, kids call us old people unks.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't like that at all.
Yeah, I don't like that either. Can't have that. Yeah. But it's a fun time of the year.
It is, yeah. Well, we got to enjoy the summer while we can before the oppressive cold of winter,
yeah,
you know, descends on us all.
Yeah. And in August, there's nothing happening politically because everyone's left town. There's some kind of Indy 500 race that's about to happen.
Oh, yeah,
in
I'm going to go to that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I could not possibly be more annoyed about it because they've closed down all the roads mm-hmm. between here and where I live,
mm-hmm.
and it's very hard to get back.
Yeah.
I take my scooter everywhere.
You think you'd be able to go faster, but no.
I was stuck on the other night. I had to be careful about what I can even say about this because might have been some activities I shouldn't talk about on the podcast. But I was
doing some off the record reporting.
I was trying to get home very late at night,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't have my scooter, so I was on one of those Lime scooters.
Mm-hmm.
That have no-go zones.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And because mm-hmm. of the construction...
Like in Europe, yeah.
They already shut off when they get too close to certain government buildings. But it's constantly changing. It's just not consistent, ever. And then now this road is shut down for this race or whatever it is. It's a race?
Mm-hmm.
They race cars?
Mm-hmm.
They're going to race cars down Constitution Avenue?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's called Freedom.
Well, freedom ain't free. So,
oh,
you know, write that down.
Jot that down.
Do you need my pen for that?
Yeah. I'll just throw it at me.
Okay.
Again.
I can't, like, there are all these barriers in my way. And I actually ended up lost in this labyrinth of barriers at 3 a.m.
Oh, no.
And the scooter had shut down. And then I'm just, like, carting this scooter. And I had to ask the National Guard how I was supposed to get out of this government prison.
Yeah.
And
they said, this is where you live now.
No,
you're in it with us.
They were very helpful.
Nice. Oh, that's good.
So I don't like it.
Kind of irritates me that they are generally jovial and nice, the National Guard, right?
They're very
nice. I don't like their presence in the city, but I have no ill will towards any individual guardsmen.
No.
You know? Yeah.
I can't, the plan is just to have them forever.
Right.
Which is
absurd.
A totally absurd plan.
Yeah.
That's not fair. Like, the rest of the country is paying for this.
Right, exactly. Yeah,
right, this
yeah.
is, I do think we need more, or it has been argued to me that the police department of DC has fewer police officers than it ever had, and they actually need more. But, like, we should pay for the police services, right? Now
yeah.
we're getting additional police services that the entire country is paying for.
Right.
It doesn't really seem fair.
It's totally unfair. No, that's why we got to privatize it.
Yeah.
Right?
Nor do they actually, they just stand around.
Right.
And they... Which deters opportunistic crime and
yeah.
has contributed to a decline in thefts,
yeah.
Car thefts, but
it's also absurdly expensive.
It's absurdly expensive, but they're not going to the areas of the city where there's actually, you know, gang related gun violence
mm-hmm.
and combating that because mm-hmm. they don't actually have any police power. If you actually stab someone in front of them, they will call for the police.
Right. Yeah.
So it's really just to deter. Because
yeah.
if there's authority figures standing around, people are less likely to snap, grab somebody's purse.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. As, yeah. Just like as an American thing, like troops
yeah.
posted on the streets. Like, come on. No, that's not what we do here.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
They're really friendly.
They are very friendly.
They're
yeah.
so friendly.
People are always like, tourists are always taking pictures with them and whatever else. Yeah. So. Again.
I feel, it's so hot out. I feel bad for them standing around
mm-hmm.
in the intense heat. But I guess the intense cold was even worse.
Sure.
We had some real bad weather.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, you ask yourself, like, would I have rather been in the, you know, Pacific or the Eastern Front during World War II?
Mm.
It's like, well, both are pretty fucking bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those were, what is the answer to that question? Those were both bad.
I think I would pick the Pacific. Yeah. But
yeah.
just because, like, you're literally going to freeze to death if you're on the Eastern Front.
Yeah.
And then go to a prisoner of war camp.
Yeah.
For like the rest of your life. Yeah.
Yeah, but there was some real, you know, some real hardcore fighting in the South Pacific.
Yeah. And like some of those battles were actually kind of cold too, because
yeah.
in like New Guinea where there's like mountains, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to like fight on the top of the mountain just to descend into the disgusting jungle
yeah.
again. No, you don't want to.
Whereas
do
in
that.
The Eastern, I mean, after we succeeded, the, you know, Omaha Beach was awful, but I think once we actually had our foothold.
Oh, well, okay. If you're
the fighting was pretty.
If you're like Americans invading.
Oh, right. You were comparing it to the like German-Russian fight.
Right.
Oh, yeah. No.
No. No. No. No. You never want to be in Russia.
No.
You never want to be in Russia.
That's absolutely not. No. That's not even a question. Send you to the South. Yes. You do not want to be fighting there. You want to be in the South Pacific.
I was listening to a podcast.
I meant for our forces.
Oh, okay.
Versus...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. The Western Front all the way.
Yeah.
Summer in Paris. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Why the hell not?
I mean, the literal.
Beach landings.
Normandy was, although my understanding is it was Omaha Beach was awful.
Yeah.
But most of the landings went fine and were.
They were less contested. Yeah.
Basically
and
not
contested.
And you weren't
scaling cliffs and things like that. Right.
Yeah. But it was real rough at the one or two landings.
I was.
But after that, they kind of just rolled through, right?
Yeah, I mean there were a lot of casualties, but it's not like the weather wasn't
the weather
enemy.
Was not a,
I mean there was some cold moments and like when the troops were encircled and like Bastogne or whatever, that got pretty chilly.
Yeah,
so that wouldn't have been good.
I mean, it would not have been fun.
Either
way. It would have been awful.
Yeah, it's funny. I was listening to a podcast about like conditions on U-boats during World War II, and just how like. Horrible it was to be in a German submarine because it's like
it does sound awful.
It's a tiny like two train car sized submarine. You're in there with 50 guys, there's obviously no showers, you don't bring any change of clothes, so everyone is just like reeking of body odor. It's wet and so mold is growing everywhere. You're just subsisting off canned food and, you can't, I mean, they do travel on the surface. So sometimes when things aren't going on, you can like get a little bit of air, but rarely. Yeah. And so it's like,
and if anything goes wrong, you're all dead.
Yes. Yeah. Boom. Yeah. So that's things like, okay, you have all these terrible
conditions.
The slightest
things go wrong.
You have all these terrible conditions. And then someone reminds you, it's like, on top of that, people are trying to kill you.
Yeah.
Yeah, not good, not good. Yeah, there was apparently this thing called the U-boat stink, where like the U-boat would come back into the port and they would like open the hatch and the people there to greet them would like flee because it just smelled so disgusting.
The claustrophobia would just, that sounds awful.
Yeah.
That sounds, of all the awful things you have to do in war, I would not want to be on.
You're stuck in a tube and then someone is dropping depth charges on you.
Oh my God.
My goodness. Yeah.
None of it would have been good.
Yeah.
We're lucky
to not have to fight a war.
We don't have to do any of this.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike, most. Oh.
Are you working on
that?
Yeah.
We're lucky. We don't have to do any of that.
Indeed. America really is, we are blessed. We have some real plot armor as a country. There's just like
our country has plot armor. That's a great concept.
It's just so many fewer things we have to deal with. Also, there's so many things that have felt, destroyed lesser nations that we have shrugged off, right? Just like look at Latin America, similar history, similar problems. We're doing okay.
Yeah.
They're still like worried that like the next election is going to bring about a fascist or a communist and it's back to the
death squads. They'll elect someone who's horrible and just wrecks all their progress that they've made immediately.
Right. And they're like, okay, well, let's try the even worse person before them again, right? Yeah. It's like in Peru, the daughter of their like former dictator just finally got elected president. And it's like, great.
Mm.
Yeah.
Good
thing we have nothing but sterling public officials.
No, they're all great. When we would never elect a family member of a previous president, of course not. We should talk about more of this. There's a lot of data center discussion in the last 24 hours.
Okay. You know what? I think I have maybe two interesting points to make about data centers that I haven't
said
points. Yes. Yeah, I know. It's crazy. It's crazy. There was a tweet I saw recently. And it was some ridiculous blue check account being like, in 5 to 10 years, everyone's going to have this in their home. And it looks like a, like a wine fridge, but it's a data center for like AI, right? It's like, that's stupid. No one is going to have this, right? But my point that I made was the fact that you don't already have this is thanks to data centers. The fact that you don't have this gigantic energy hungry box heating up your home to 100 degrees is because we've moved that somewhere else, right?
Women would love that. Yeah. Never warm enough.
Honey, can you turn down the air conditioning? All right. Regardless of the gender split on data centers.
I have to go stand outside the courtroom to make sure. There's also more for Lindsay.
Yeah, at least the courtroom has heat. But that, all that aside, yeah, the reason we've centralized, like, the fact that you don't smelt your own steel or grow your own crops, right? You don't produce and store your own data anymore. It's all done at a big data center, mm-hmm. and you're better off for it. So stop fucking complaining about the data centers. Yeah, there was some poll that went around about, like, you know, public support for data centers, and they're massively underwater, right? It's like, do you want one of these in their community?
No.
And they asked, they broke it out. It was interesting about this poll was they broke it down between AI data centers and then, like, data centers for streaming services. And even the streaming service one was massively underwater. And it's like, what do you, you're using that data center right now.
It has to be built somewhere.
It's got to be built somewhere.
But this is why, so my friend Nick Claremont had some tweet about how this is like the backlash against building nuclear power centers, that it's really not about that. It's about fears about nuclear weapons. And so this isn't really about opposition to the centers themselves. It's really about man's internal sense that the internet and technology is bad and wrong for us. And okay. I disagree. With all due respect to my dear friend Nick, I disagree with this because, well, A, I disagree that, like, the internet is – I don't even know how we go about beginning to argue that as people who all make our livings.
Right.
On, you know, Sagar and Jetty responded to this, who's the host of Breaking Points. And, like, your entire existence is owed to the technology that these centers are needed for. All that said, when you hear people complaining about data centers – they are actually just complaining about construction-related consequences in their neighborhood. They're complaining about misleading water and energy consumption and noise.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the as they were building one of them, they hit some water pipe and then all the water was brown for a little while. It's just and the benefit of it is less obvious to people than if they were to build a new school or a new hospital.
Yeah.
We must always try to connect it to – we need them for all the things you like, because people do like and want these things. They're not going to give them up.
Mm-hmm.
No one is like, oh, yeah, I would rather there not be streaming. I would rather there not be Google. I would rather not have GPS. And if you said that, we would say, shut the fuck up.
Right.
You're lying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's not true.
You can opt out of a lot of these things.
You mm-hmm. don't want to, because convenience is actually good.
Right.
Which is not to say that there are not, you know, the – increased the polarization, whatever, our political discussion on social media is worse. That's one facet of the internet. That is not even, that's a subset of a subset of a subset. That's not even how most people are using technology in their lives.
Right. You're not going to get rid of the data centers and then have social media be better, right? Yeah. Like, right. That's not going to happen. Yeah.
Right.
Totally. Yeah. So it's like
kind of dumb.
Yeah. It's also people complain about, like, oh, here's these limited local externalities of data centers. But I think it actually runs in the opposite direction. There's these tremendous localized benefits of data centers that communities are able to extract because the data centers are fabulously profitable. They want to locate in a town. So they tax the bejesus out of them. And the locality, they get their community center and their high school and their public
pool. Loudoun County lowered its property tax.
Yeah. Where, but then I end up having to pay for these taxes via higher cost for data center, you know, products.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem very fair to me, does it?
Yeah. No. That's a good point.
Thank you.
I know. I want
those are my 2 points.
I want what Loudoun County has, lower property taxes.
Yeah. Although, you ever been out to Loudoun County?
No.
Yeah, it's a strange and scary place.
You know why they call it Loudoun County?
It's all the data centers.
All those loud data. Are they that loud?
No, they're not.
I thought that was a lie.
Yeah.
Lindsay or one of my co-hosts or someone was trying to say, oh, they're so loud. Someone was saying that, and I without knowing anything, I just said, no, I don't think so. I had no information.
They are always well below, like, municipal decibel level standards. The thing people complain about is it's a steady sound, so I guess that could be annoying. And there's a vibration too that can come, but that's why there's a data center project I've written about in Nashville where they're building it next to the zoo, and the zoo is like, oh, my, you know, our sensitive spotted leopards, you know, might not be able to handle the vibrations. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, if you're, like, you know, bred on the Serengeti to, you know, hear a twig snapping from 2 miles away, sure, yeah, okay, maybe data centers.
Meanwhile, the zebras are like, this is so cool.
Right. Right, nature's massage chair. That's what a data center is. Yeah, it's, I don't know, it's tough when there's, like, an issue of, you know, going public concern, and there's really only so much you can say about it. This is where we are with the data centers. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, someone on Twitter was, comparing data center panic to like French Revolution style paranoia, where it's like, yeah, they just destroyed the country because people imagine this plot of like the aristocrats destroying the crops to starve everybody. Mm-hmm. And I have to point out, like, say what you will about, like, murderous French peasants, but, like, they were, in fact, suffering from a bread shortage. The data center has taken no food out of your mouth.
Yeah.
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 So.
But you can't eat data.
Can't eat data. Can't drink data. Mm-mm-mm. Can't drink data. The tweet I like going, that I've seen going around, a couple different forms of it, is you should treat your body like a data center. Consume nothing but water and literature.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
So that was one.
But they enable Flock, so we as libertarians.
Oh, let's talk about Flock again. Bye. Flock is less good, or maybe in fact even bad. Yeah. I think we have some problems with it.
Yes, I agree. I mean, there's been many documented cases of abuses. What's irritating me from the pro Flock side, the Singapore Institute, or I'm sorry, the Manhattan Institute. someone has applied a modicum of scrutiny to law enforcement. So, of mm-hmm. course, they're going into conniption fits. And the new Richard Hanania was going off about how these aren't, you know, pointing out the many ways in which Flock has been abused is not an argument against Flock. And it's like, of course it is.
Yeah.
This is so stupid. Let me browbeat you with my point here.
Okay.
So the proponents of Flock are going to say, look at all these crimes the technology is allowing us to solve and all these law enforcement benefits, whatever. Let's just accept that for a moment as completely true, okay? Even though we could get into
those
that.
Are very dubious, but
yes. Yeah, Flock says Flock is great. Huh, curious.
Right.
Let's accept all that is true.
They found a missing child who wasn't really missing.
Right.
And was...
Sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So it's like, I have an anecdote, you have an anecdote, right?
Right.
Okay. Fine. This is the battlefield on which we are fighting.
Yes.
If you're going to tell me that Flock is creating all these novel benefits, the technology itself, well, then it's also an argument against the technology if it's, you know, allowing for novel abuses, right? Mm-hmm. If beforehand the police officer couldn't use Flock to stalk his ex-girlfriend
and now can,
that's a particular problem with Flock, right? And so that is a point against the technology. So to just like wave away this argument as like, oh, well, that's just bad policing, or that's just law enforcement can abuse eyewitnesses, whatever else. That's just so disingenuous. It really mm-hmm. has been pissing me off. Mm. Yeah. It's particularly insidious coming from these Manhattan Institute folks because like they're also super invested into prosecuting every single petty crime possible, mm-hmm. right? So if you combine these two things, which is like a forest of all-seeing eyes that watches everything that you do and everywhere you go in public, then is connected to AI, and so it's easy for law enforcement to track you. And then you have their prosecution agenda of like, anytime you smoke a joint on the street, you should go to jail for 5 years. Mm-hmm. The combination of those two things is getting closer and closer to like a Singaporean-type police state, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
The limits should be placed on. I moderated a debate between Raphael Mangual, mm-hmm, who's of the Manhattan Institute, and the Cato Institute on this. I've engaged a little bit with Charles Fain Lyman on this. I think the limitations need to be placed on the police and how they can use it.
Yeah,
because we're not gonna stop this technology from existing, right? It's the public space. The expectation of privacy is different. You can record people to some degree, but police behavior is constrained by what we allow and what the Constitution says.
The Fourth Amendment.
And the police just watching you at all times and having recordings of you is clearly going beyond what we have said they can be able to do.
Particularly given that, you can say, okay, you can record people in public and that's not a Fourth Amendment problem.
Well, I can and you can, but there are rules for what the police can do.
Right. But in the distinction too is, the government requires you to put a license plate, Flock, they're automatic license plate readers, right?
Right.
The government requires you to put a license plate on your car, right? And so then with Flock,
that's
a way of tracking someone, right?
Yes.
So it's equivalent to saying if the government required you to carry a tracking beacon with you at all times, we would understand the constitutional and privacy problems of that. But just say, oh, it's just a license plate reader. Come on.
Right.
Yeah, you're missing a point. And I think even many of Flock's defenders will concede when they're done, you know, jerking off for the pro claw base on Twitter. Will concede many of the safeguards we would like to see. Yeah. You know, it's like, oh, yeah.
There was a lot of agreement when we did this debate.
Yeah, exactly. People, like, even the pro-Flock people are reasonable when you pin them down on questions of, like, safeguards for this technology and how it should be used. But that's not what you hear. They instead want to have the argument against, like, cameras writ large or whatever. Yeah. I mean, I'm not in favor of banning Flock per se either, because in the same way that, like, you know, I think, you know, some people don't like this as libertarians, but, like, I'm fine with traffic cameras and everything else, right? You assume there's going to be some...
I mean, they annoy me, but...
Yeah, you gotta maintain some order on the public roads.
I mean, I would like if we actually did maintain order on the public roads. What I don't like about them is that you can look at a database and there's a small number of serial, of like, awful, aggressively bad criminal drivers who are a major danger to other people who have racked up thousands of dollars in tickets, and there is no enforcement against them. Their cars are not being impounded or hauled away. They're not being arrested. So it's just you and I who maybe occasionally go a little bit over the speed limit or maybe, you know, turn right on red when we're not supposed, who are going to get a ticket and pay our ticket. And I don't, anarcho-tyranny.
Exactly. Yeah. And this is why safeguards, like, speak to better policing too, right? Because if you're limited in the kinds of information you can pull from these cameras, right? Well, then that's an incentive to focus on more serious serial abusers or violators, as opposed to just like, oh, you have, you know, carte blanche to look at all the data you want. Okay, well, then you can just go after whoever ran the red light.
Or
running a red light is a more serious offense, but
Then turning right on red, because you're there's so many places in DC where you can't turn right on red.
Well, I think it's a citywide, citywide restriction now, right?
Is it a citywide restriction?
Yeah, they changed the law.
Idiotic.
Yeah.
Idiotic.
Yeah. This is a big discourse in the or big topic of concern in the urbanism discourse is right on red. So yeah, it's weird. Yeah, people say right on red is a lot worse for pedestrian safety. But I always thought that's apparently borne out in the data. I haven't made a close study of it. What I always think would be worse is left on green, right?
Yeah.
Because you're pulled out in the middle of the intersection. You got cars coming. Yeah. And you're like, oh, shit, I got to go. And then you weave around the oncoming traffic.
Right. You see you have a couple seconds before a car's coming. You can make it. And then you realize, oh, somebody's crossing the street here. Yeah.
Whereas right on red, it's like, okay, you look over here, see if a car's coming, and then you're looking where you're driving.
You know?
So I don't know, but
They moved. There's an intersection I have where they had it, and it seemed to make more sense to me. Where sometimes they have the bike lane and the right turn lane switch, and they cross paths, and then they're on the other side, or they're not crossed to begin with. But this is right. The bike lane is here.
Oh,
the right turn lane is here.
On the other side of the bike lane.
So you're not going to turn into the path of the bike.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, they decided they didn't like it that way. And they switched them. And now the road's here, the bike is here. So you would turn into the bike. So what they do is they give the bike people they prolong the period at which you can't turn right. So the bike people can all go. And then the light shuts off for the bike people and you can turn. But what happens is the bike people just go anyway if they come up, and no good.
No.
No good.
I mean, you don't have to be a traffic engineer to realize the danger of, like, cars going across the bike lane. You know,
but planners are idiots.
Central planners especially.
No good.
Plan the periphery for once.
Yeah, plan yourself. Plan your own life before you start planning, you know, what I can put in my own body and where I can, you know, take my scooter and, you know.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Unflock my city. Yeah.
Amen, brother.
I have a couple other things I wanted to get to here, so let's move it along. Oh, you want to talk about 28 Days Later.
Oh, yes.
Tell me why.
So, so I've done... I don't watch movies anymore. Instead, I watch random clips from movies that add up to the full movie.
When you're supposed to be working. I think 28 Days Later is okay.
I think it's great. Why did you say it's just
zombie?
Okay?
The zombie concept does not really appeal to me anymore.
But this was like an OG zombie film. And it was a fast zombie film.
I have so much zombie fatigue. It extends backward in time to movies I saw before I became tired of zombies.
That's a little unfair.
I would not see the sequel or the sequel sequel or the sequel sequel sequel.
I did see the first sequel 28 months later.
I saw it in YouTube clips.
Yeah. That one was not as good. And I haven't seen the most recent one.
28 months later.
28 years later.
Okay. And it'll be 28 centuries later. It'll be zombies on Mars. Mars zombies.
Big mistake. Yeah.
Okay. The fast zombies.
Yes.
The rage virus.
So, yeah.
Those environmentalists just had to free those
monkeys.
That's
right. That's right. Yeah. That is a great
origin story, though, for the zombie virus.
The toxic combination of PETA and lab leak.
Yep. Yeah.
So they released the rage virus. And if you haven't seen the movie, how it works is like the zombies vomit blood on you and then you become a rage monster and go around vomiting blood on other people. What I was thinking watching this movie, because then the movie is set 28 days later after the outbreak and there's like 5 survivors in all of the UK, right? But what I was thinking was like, this would actually be, all things considered, once you figure out what's going on, a pretty easy virus to contain. Right? Because there's no, it would be very difficult to have community spread because you know exactly.
Because it's immediate.
It happens immediately. So there's like no incubation period and you know exactly who's infected. And there would be no argument about what is to be done once someone is infected. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, you take, to compare it to COVID, it takes a while for someone to know they're infected. Right? So it's easy for them to go around spreading it when you do. And then once someone is infected or at risk of spreading it, well, then there's a big policy debate. Do you quarantine people? Right. You know, do you do lockdowns? Do you force people to wear masks or whatever? In this context, it's like, oh, the violent person vomiting blood, killing everyone, you just shoot them, right? There's no recovering them, right? And so that would actually, you know, you hole up in your home or you set up a military cordon and
I mean they do kind of contain it, right? Because it's contained to the UK.
Contained to the UK, but I'm saying that like much before then, right? Because in the movie there's like 5 survivors. There would be many millions of survivors, right? They're so fast. Yeah, but then you just start, you know, you get a little bit of distance and some firearms and boom, you're good to go.
In The Walking Dead, it can't be contained because anyone who dies becomes a zombie. Even if you die for any reason, you will reanimate as a zombie. Even if you didn't die from zombie-related reasons.
Yeah.
Which never makes any sense to me because then I'm like, why do non-fatal zombie bites kill you at all?
There's a lot. Not the that show's virus. Not very well thought out.
Right. And then the zombies are just like, I'm sorry, if someone like casually scratches you, they won't like pull off your arm. Like there's so much like people are made of butter on that show. Like the zombie's like, and it just, you know, sticks his entire fist inside it. But how is this thing even still animated? Even if its brain wants to animate it, because it's now years later, and these like some of these are like melting puddles on the sidewalk,
right?
Like after snow in the elements.
That's the other thing. I like
the body should deteriorate, even if the brain is still telling it to go eat people, like.
That's what I like about 28 Days Later, though, is like the zombies like starve to death eventually.
Yeah.
That's how the outbreak ends. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And then also this does happen. They get into this a little in the sequel, but also like lots of people would be immune to the virus as well. Right. You would assume that there's some portion of the population that's going to be immune. Mm-hmm. So and also like lots of people would just die immediately if they get infected, too. Mm-hmm. So like all of that would mitigate against such quick spread. So.
Yeah,
that's my epidemiological criticism of the movie.
I don't love zombie stuff.
I do like it, although my problem with the genre is like I want to see the phase where they're like reclaiming civilization. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because that would happen. You don't really see the containment of the outbreak. Instead, every zombie movie has to end with like, oh, and the world's over. Yeah, come on.
Yeah, or just drag on forever, like The Walking Dead.
Yeah, like the zombies in which they predict.
Yeah. I wanted to bring up what else we got on here.
Give me something. Give me something to talk about.
Yeah. Did you read this? You probably didn't. There was an interesting New York Times article on matchmaking, dating, dating. Did you see this? It was interesting. It was centered on this one guy who's like 38 years old, which is how old I am. I just turned 38.
Happy birthday!
Yeah, thank you. Took you long enough. What'd you get me? I mean, we had
years of good cheer.
We had a big party. It was so fun. Everyone was there. Mm-hmm. You know, we you weren't there.
I'm sitting at home blowing up my happy birthday Robbie balloons. And,
you got your little hat on. Was it a green pointy hat?
I'm sure the text will come down any second.
I would have liked that. It's this guy who he's 38. He's wealthy. He's like a, I don't know, computer executive or something.
Check, check, check.
And he's paying for this service, this matchmaking service to try to find you a girlfriend to marry and have a family. And he's just striking out left and right. Wow. And the article's like, what's wrong with this? It's a commentary on how nobody's dating anymore. Yeah. People are not settling down.
Yeah.
And everybody was doing, like, why is the case that this guy can't find somebody? And it was overlooked, but I saw so his demands were pretty
right, I did high see up this. There. Right.
You did see this.
Parts of it, yeah.
Yeah, and like he wants to find a ideally a female executive or attorney or doctor.
Okay.
And I'm like, well, this is your problem right there. Yeah. I mean, like Sheryl Sandberg type women are rare and not necessarily looking now they're ready. They've prioritized careers up until now, but now they'd like to have kids with you immediately.
So, or like, someone who's such a catch and is interested in getting married is probably already married too. So,
You're now, if that's what you're looking for, you're now competing in the highest echelon.
Yeah.
So now the fact that you're a little too, you're wealthy and well-dressed and maybe you have great conversation, but you're a little too short is going to kill you in this.
Right.
Now, if you set your expectations even just a little bit low, or like maybe a nice teacher lady, maybe a nurse, maybe like a still someone, you know, not Betty Draper or something, but someone who is a working person.
A middle manager.
But
right, not an executive. Yeah.
Right. Just anyone else in the professional
a junior
hierarchy.
Vice president.
Yeah. Sorry that maybe they won't be able to talk to you about the French Revolution or Russian literature, but you know, they'll listen when you say those things. You can make it work.
Mm-hmm.
There's not enough slightly mismatched professional level marriages anymore, right? Mm-hmm. Like back not that long ago, the boss would marry a secretary anyway, you know, especially a second, third time around.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Fourth time around. Yeah.
You know, you marry a, you know, cute girl and that's fine.
Yeah.
But now everyone's like, oh, you got to meet someone in your same who has just as many degrees as you do.
Yeah.
And that's the limiting problem.
If you want to play softball, there's lots of different softball leagues you could join. If your demand is that you play in the majors, well, it's going to demand a lot more from that. Yeah. So I think people said he was also a Republican, which was limiting his options.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's probably part of it, too.
That's probably part of it. But I think it's that he – I mean, that's a pretty – like a high-powered female executive.
Yeah. Come on, man.
Or doctor.
How many of those can there even be? No, I'm sorry.
No, but you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, that's of course. Just, yeah. Seems crazy. Like a prison of his own making.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No good.
Try to be a little more charitable is what I would say to him.
Yeah. Just, you know, open yourself to other possibilities.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. If you have such demands of a potential partner, it sounds like you're actually probably not going to be a good partner yourself.
Why?
Right?
Why look for a woman at all?
Mm-hmm.
There's always that.
Oh, dear.
There's always that.
That'll work. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, good looking having kids that way.
No, it's I'm doing something wrong there. I'm not quite sure. You finally watched, speaking of sex, you finally watched Sex House, which
I
love.
Oh, my goodness. Delightfully deranged.
It's this weird onion thing from like 20 years ago.
Yeah, so I believe a couple episodes ago, we talked about Porkin' Across America.
Sick.
Which was a sick and nihilist. Yeah, if you found that funny, you were a bad person, and I found it hilarious.
Yeah.
But they made another series called Sex House, which
it's
told
so
me
good.
About.
I saw that one first.
So it's a parody of like Real World or whatever. It's like six sexy singles in the same house, all having sex. Except
there's no sex in it whatsoever.
Yeah, so it starts off just like brutally sad, right?
Yeah.
Because one of the people in the sex house is like this dad with kids who won like a sweepstakes.
And he's the only one who hooks up with anyone.
Yeah, and he hooks up with like the young virgin girl in the first episode, and they're both like emotionally devastated by it.
Yeah.
And then the series just turns into a horror show of they're like trapped in this house.
They can't get out.
Only being fed moldy bread. And there's like this cast of characters that like keeps coming in trying to get them to have sex, but it's all part of like some weird horror plot.
There's one episode where they've just all been drugged because the producers are hoping that will make them have sex.
Yeah,
they don't know what's going on.
Yeah, right.
And then like it ends, they figure out that the drugs are poisonous and they stop taking them.
Right.
And they're like, well, that was a new low for what this show will do to us. Like they're speaking it to camera the way they do.
Right.
We just lost 3 days of our lives.
Or they're like, they're trying to encourage them to have sex, so they bring in like a big terrarium full of frogs because the frogs are banging.
But then the frogs get loose.
Yeah, and then they have to like eat the frogs because there's no protein in the house and they're all dying of malnutrition.
It's really good. Yeah, it escalates very gradually to the point of that.
Yeah, it's so funny.
Man, weird stuff from the aughts. There's not enough of that anymore.
The Onion was a strange, strange animal.
They used to produce some good shit. Now they're under management of people I don't approve of.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not laughing very much, but I also don't know if I'm not laughing because I know who's making the jokes and I don't like them, like in a very personal way, which is, not a good way to go about ordering your life. It's that guy, Ben Collins.
Yeah, that's this fucking guy.
Yeah,
he was
awful.
One of these like misinformation reporters that himself indulged in all sorts of misinformation,
paranoid
and lies,
conspiracy,
and,
right. think, just a conspiratorial view of the world around
right.
him.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, but he drove himself insane and wanted nothing more to do with being a reporter in media.
Yeah,
and
so if he's going to be a parody of a reporter, it makes sense that so he would run a parody news
somehow
organization.
Somehow acquired the company.
So there's a meta humor to that I feel like the old Onion would have created.
Yeah, I see some of their reels and things for their video product. They've kind of revived some of that, those Onion video things, and they seem kind of funny. So.
There was one good one where it was like, OpenAI builds data center in bedroom of like terminally ill child.
Oh,
that one was pretty good. They have a new show which I haven't really watched, and I don't know where to find it actually, but the guy from Porkin' Across America,
yeah, that's what I mean about his reels,
right?
I don't know if that is a show or it's just
they're
making reels.
Yeah, and it's also just kind of one note, the reels, so even if I find it funny, it's like I don't know if like
I think maybe it is just reels.
Yeah, because the what made Porkin' Across America and Sex House work is that it's like
slow build.
It's a slow build of increasingly deranged humor and also like kind of smart in its depravity. The Porkin' Across America, he's obsessed with this show, making like a Food Network show. And he's so obsessed with it that his life starts to fall apart around him. And he also becomes more and more, through a series of gruesome injuries and medical interventions, like the pigs he's eating. But then he realizes all he wanted along was his family. And so by becoming transformed into a monstrous pig, he reclaims his humanity.
We are talking about some really obscure stuff today. Anyone still listening to this podcast at this point is...
This is your alternative to the algorithm. We have gone back in time to extract these deep cuts like an archaeologist and are presenting them to you instead of, you haven't asked ChatGPT, what should I think today?
Yeah. We are rescuing you from, again, that prison of your own mind.
Yeah.
The rotting from the inside out, that I keep using that metaphor, that's what's happening to you. And we're trying to save you. And we're doing a damn good job of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're doing great. I think we should throw ourselves a party that.
Well,
and lots of
finally.
People. You?
No, you're right.
Well,
you're right. That wouldn't be appropriate.
I don't know.
No, I know.
I don't know. Maybe next time.
Well, it makes the podcast work because now my insatiable desire to please you and get in your good graces, leads to the snappy banter that we have.
That's how I like to arrange my relationships with most people.
Codependence.
Having their desperate need to please me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Good. Did you think that was funny?
You did a okay job today. I think we went real, we got real out there, and maybe something will happen in the news that's of any interest to us whatsoever.
Maybe.
That we can talk about, but we can't guarantee that until at least after midterms.
September
maybe.
Midterms.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Can you believe that we just have to talk, like, politics is getting so boring right now and stale.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Let's jump the shark, and so that now it's like,
I'm kind of glad to have all these DSA-type characters.
Hey, talk a little bit about policy again.
New cast. Saying some things. Oh, Mehdi Hasan, and then we'll wrap. Mehdi Hasan, that guy, he had some comments.
Personal.
What?
It's become personal.
He yelled at me about it. He had some comment where he's like, well, there's a far right and there's a far left, but these are not equivalent things because the far right wants fascism and ethno-nationalism and the far left just wants free healthcare.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, well, that's not true. No. The far left, which is totally empowered, it's the DSA is winning elections all over the place in primaries, does not just want free healthcare. They want to overthrow the Constitution and erase all borders and prisons and capitalism. And like, they have a very radical, they revere authoritarian figures. They say nice things about terrorist groups. They do that. And on, if I'm being perfectly honest, they are taking power currently on a level that the far right is not. James Fishback just lost humiliatingly. There's no Republican Senate candidate who's going to do a fundraiser with Nick Fuentes. It's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen it happen yet. Mm-hmm. That's not true on the other side. It's just not true.
Yeah, so this is the DSA's pitch for themselves. If you go onto their website, it's actually kind of comical. They're like, imagine, you know, if every day was Saturday, you know, you could go to a job that you find fulfilling, but you don't have to. Your basic needs will still be met, right? And it's like, so this is why we're supposed to like communism, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, if you just want to make every day Saturday, why do you spend all your time like defending, you know, the Cuban dictatorship and, you know, Mao's genius and are monomaniacally focused on Israel and Palestine?
In the Soviet gulag, every day is Monday.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know.
Oh, man. Do you remember there was one of these tanky DSA types who was doing a little Stalinist revisionism? And so there's like the meme going around about like, you know, actually in Stalinist Russia, there was, you know, free healthcare, you know, free basic necessities, free movement within gulag area.
Oh,
yeah, which I guess even that wasn't exactly true.
Yeah. Anyway, I replied to Mehdi, pointed that out, and he replied.
Oh, yeah, you had a good reply where you're like, you could just say the far right is all about lowering taxes, right? If we're just going to be completely dishonest.
Completely dishonest. And he replied that I was an idiot or something.
Got you. Got you.
Got me.
Yeah. But, well, maybe you should invite him to your birthday party.
Well, I'd more likely invite him than you. Yeah. Because, you know, you're just not going to be there.
But. Oh, I'm working on it. I'm working on it. Yeah. Oh. That's a good point, boss.
I mean, this is the vibe we try to go for. Yeah. Please, Robbie. I mean, nobody else does this. Everybody's out to get me, man.
Well, maybe your standards are too high. Like the, you know, you want a, you know, corporate executive sitting here. And all you got is little old me.
All right. Let's wrap it up. We've said a lot of absolutely nothing, but hope y'all enjoyed it.
Thanks for watching.
Gentlemen and lady, maybe.
One day.
We'll see. Bye-bye.